Agreed to the revenue committee with no recommendation.
Senator Gordon moves Senate Bill 763 to the Committee on Revenue with no recommendation. Discussion, objections, ordered. Close the work session, open work session on Senate Bill 893.
Let me see who all voted.
Harper, Starr, and...
Excuse.
And Decker are excused. Atkinson's here.
Atkinson's right here.
Yeah.
You're lucky I'm here this afternoon. Now, let me tell you something. Cottage Grove's a long way away, and I'm going to be really quiet this afternoon, and we're going to get the hell out of Dodge quickly, Mr. Chair.
Sounds good to me.
Good.
Senator Corcoran. Open work session on Senate Bill 893.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 893.
Senator Gordon moves the dash 3 amendments into Senate Bill 893. Discussion, objections, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 893 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves Senate Bill 893 as amended by the committee to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. For the discussion, objections, so ordered. And once again, our missing members are excused, and we don't need carriers for either one of those bills because they are going to other committees. Closed work session, open a public hearing on Senate Bill 383.
I actually know about this bill. This is a good bill. We did this in interim T&E bill, didn't we? This bill we did in interim T&E.
What, 35? Okay.
Okay, we're on 383.
Yes.
Oh.
Never mind.
Mr. Putman.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 383 is here, and it deals with the authority of full license, full premise license holder to purchase distilled liquor from an agent of the Liquor Control Commission and declares an emergency. However, we have four proposed amendments. The dash 5 replaces all but the emergency clause of the original bill, inserts the language of five other bills with modifications to those five other bills, I don't know how you want to proceed, if you want to proceed amendment by amendment or piece of amendment by piece of amendment. Maybe just write down the SMS would do it. I don't know.
Well, I think we're going to proceed by taking public testimony first, okay. And we are going to speak about the amendments, the 2, 3, 4, and 5 amendments, and we're not going to worry about the content of the original bill, and hopefully in our discussions. Do you have a sign-up sheet?
No.
For the people who are sitting there waiting, watching, wondering, the dash 5 amendments are at the request of me. The dash 2, 3, and 4 amendments are at the request of Senator Gordley.
And, Mr. Chair, those 2, 3, and 4 amendments were introduced on behalf of OLCC. It's up to them to explain and defend them. I don't have any other investment in them.
Okay, we have two people from OLCC, John and Betty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good afternoon. My name is John Steubenval. I'm the Communications Director for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. With me today is Bette Wooster, who's OLCC's Regulatory Process Director. Mr. Chair, it's your pleasure. Ms. Wooster has prepared some testimony on each of these proposed amendments, the dash 2s and the dash 3s, and she could proceed with that.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I'll just go through these. If you have any questions as I'm talking, please ask me as they occur to you.
Aren't the amendments in your packet, Senator Corcoran?
Should be.
I guess I don't know the packet.
Well, that case,
we will get you some amendments. I don't have any extras.
Steele, Colonel Clinton's not here. Steele is. No, he's here. I don't, and plus he's bigger than I am.
Yeah,
I don't want to steal it.
They don't have it. So, Pam, do you have a packet for, no, you don't. All right. I don't know what to do.
Did we just...
It's not big, I mean, let her go ahead.
Sure, there's
get one of you. Do you have something else?
I know what's happening, so...
Go ahead.
I'll follow.
Starting with Senate Bill 382, this is a bill that we wanted introduced that would allow a person who wants a service permit to have someone other than just a licensee of the commission sign the service permit. The way the statute reads now...
Which one are you speaking on?
I'm sorry, Senate Bill 382.
Which dash amendment?
Those are part of the dash,
dash five,
five, Mr. Chair.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Thank you.
Currently, if a person wants a service permit, and they need to have a service permit to sell alcohol, to serve alcohol in the state of Oregon, the only person who can sign that application for them is a licensee of the commission. We've become aware recently, actually, that there are other businesses that do not want or need to be a licensee of the commission, but they have a legitimate interest in having the ability to sign service permit applications. So this proposal is so that those businesses, and they're businesses who provide temporary servers to licensees for large events or as a licensee may need it, we would like for those businesses to be able to sign service permit application. And they sign the application as well as look at the verification to make sure that the person who is applying is the person who they say they are. In addition to that, we would like to have designated employees of the Liquor Commission be able to sign service permit applications. We want everyone who serves to be instructed in laws, and a lot of servers would like to have a service permit, but they want to have the service permit when they apply for a job. They want to be able to apply and already have everything done. So if employees of the Liquor Commission could sign those service permits, then a person could take their server education, get their service permit signed by the commission, and actually have the permit on them when they're applying for a job. We believe that this would support the industry. It would make education more easily obtainable for people, and it would be good for the state of Oregon. Are there any questions on that particular one?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Gore.
Let's again clarify which amendment we're talking about and where that amendment is being inserted.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley. Yes.
Yes, and, Mr. Chair.
And perhaps it might be easier if I just started through that. It was Senate Bill 382, but let me... Page 9, service permits.
And the dash 5 amendments.
Mr. Chair, would it be easiest if I just started with this and went through it sequentially? That might be easier for all of us.
I agree.
Okay. Fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you want to make any comments, Mr. Chair, at this time, or have any questions answered on that one, or should we just start at the first and go through them?
Go ahead and start at the front of it,
okay.
And we'll interrupt you with questions if we got them.
Okay, thank you. The first one I'll just make brief reference to is on page 1 of the proposed amendments to Senate Bill 383. This has to do with sufficient licensed premises in the locality that the commission would take into account seasonal fluctuations. We currently do not use the standard sufficient licensed premises. I don't see anything wrong with this. We don't see anything wrong with it. But it is something that we're already looking at because we don't have a quota system. There's not a limit on the number of licenses we have. So generally, actually, any time that we have denied a license, it's been on some cause other than there being enough licenses in the area. So this one is fine. We don't see a real need for it, but it's fine. It doesn't hurt anything.
There's quite a bit of discussion, Mr. Chair, in the interim about this, and I think it was Newport that was just Lincoln City that was having a heck of a time getting an additional license because you guys kept saying that they were too small, but it wasn't measured during their high tourist season.
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, I believe that discussion might have centered around not liquor licensees, but liquor stores, state liquor stores. They're different animals.
I'm not sure for which.
So I believe that was the discussion, in fact, during the interim, was about liquor stores.
Okay. Thank you.
Please continue.
The next amendment that I see is on page 5, which is replacing some blank lines with the words none. That's fine. I've seen several different versions how that could be corrected.
And, Madam Chair, if I might, the language there on page
5
in the dash 5 amendments also is this identical language to that in the dash 4 amendments. So that language would cover the dash 4 amendments.
Madam Chairman?
Mr. Putnam?
I would agree with what you just said if you limited it to lines 7, 8, and 9.
That's correct. Administrator, the language is slightly different from the language in that of the dash 4 amendments. The effect is the same.
But on 7, 8, and 9, lines 14 through 17 are not in the dash 4.
Correct, but lines
yes.
7 and 8 on page 5.
Absolutely.
On page 5, right.
And then, Mr. Chair, on that same page, there are the lines you were just talking about, lines 9 through 17, which would change the amount of money charged for events, for temporary events, and we have no position on that. That's fine. On page 6 is a continuation of our discussion. Yes, and on number 8, which has to do with the nonprofit or charitable organization, license fee being 200 rather than the 400 that it is currently, we can live with that. Actually, this has changed since our commission took an official position on it, and there's not a problem with it.
And you're aware this is the language from somewhat from Senate Bill 3, and
yes, Mr. Chair, yes.
We are. Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I might, John Steubenvall, if I might address Section 4 in the Dash 5 amendments, the noise provisions. This is the language from House Bill 2456-A, A engrossed. We can live with the language from that legislation, 2456-A. We have some serious concerns about expanding on page 7, lines 2 through 6, we have some serious concerns about expanding the language that's currently in 2456A engrossed to incorporate the new language that's on page 7, lines 2 through 6. This would require a conviction based on a local noise ordinance before OLCC could take any sort of administrative action against a licensee.
Correct.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Go ahead.
Where does that, where did that language originate?
I'm not aware of that. Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, I'm not aware exactly where this language came from. I know there have been a number of discussions on this point, but I'm not aware of where this specific language came from.
Senator Gordley, I'm hopeful that someone that's coming up later to talk about this will let us know, because it came from a proposed LC draft to 2456.
Right.
And I'm struggling right now to remember who it was that asked about that. So hopefully one of the people that we're going to be hearing from later will address it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
Wouldn't that, in effect, be raising the standard quite a bit, requiring the conviction?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, in our opinion, yes, it would.
Thank you.
I'll continue on, Mr. Chair. Section 6 in the Dash 5 amendments. Section 6, the relevant language is on page 8, line 9. What this section of the amendment does is simply to correct a problem with current statute. Current statute says that to purchase alcohol in the state, a person can use a military ID only if the military ID has the person's address on it. The vast majority of military ID, in fact, does not have an address on it. This is the language from Senate Bill 658. We agree that this piece of the statute does need to be corrected, and this would correct that piece.
And, Mr. Chair, as I recall, this language also addresses the concern of a constituent represented by Senator Duke.
That's right. Senator Duke.
Okay, Mr. Chair, now I believe we're at the place where we started, where I started, which would be the section labeled service permits on page 9. This change in statute would allow two types of entities besides licensees of the commission to sign a service permit application. Service permittees currently can only get a service permit if they find a licensee to sign their application. This would allow businesses who employ people who will be temporary service permittees to also sign the application, or it would also allow a designated commission employee to sign an application. Are there questions on that? Mr. Chair.
Good.
Okay. The next comment that we have is on page 11, temporary sales licenses. This amendment would allow anyone to get a temporary sales license. And temporary sales licenses are for special events. Currently, according to statute, there is a list of people who can get a temporary sales license. It includes any licensee of the commission can get a sales license for nonprofit organizations, political committees, state and local governments. And currently it says any person, if the event that they're going to have is one that minors could be anywhere on the premises. We have a concern about opening the statute up to allow anyone to apply for a temporary license. For one thing, the existing statute came from Senate Bill 300 Task Force, which was mandated by the 1997 legislature. They were charged with simplifying our license structure and looking at making the license system more viable. They came up with the language that you have currently before you, not with the amendment. And their belief was that special licenses should be for special events, should be handled by people basically who either have experience in the area as our licensees or for nonprofits, governments, those kinds of agencies. Not only, if this amendment went through, not only would it greatly increase processing time for both our agency and local law enforcement, but also overseeing and monitoring the number of events that could proliferate would be a big administrative burden. But more importantly, we're concerned about public safety. We're concerned that there would be people requesting licenses that may want rave parties, that may want to have a birthday party open to the public for somebody who just turned 21, and it would be an event that would be heavily attended by minors. These are kinds of things that would be difficult to process, and if the licenses were granted, it could be a public safety issue. So we have some deep concerns about going in this direction. Are there questions about that? Comments? Okay.
I guess that's
it, isn't it?
Okay.
That's it on the dash fives, Mr. Chair, correct?
Would you like to speak to dash two, threes, or fours?
Please.
On the dash twos, Senate Bill 376. Senate Bill 376 currently allows the Liquor Commission to request financial and other information on all persons and entities that have a financial interest in any licensed business. The statute further gives the Liquor Commission authority to suspend, cancel, or not renew a license if anyone who has a financial interest in that business could not be licensed themselves. The interesting thing about the statute is it seems that there's an oversight, because although we can suspend, cancel, or not renew a licensee if they have that kind of person, the same standard doesn't apply for an applicant for a license. So, in essence, if we cannot deny an applicant who maybe has, somebody has gifted them $1 million, and that person that has gifted them that money clearly is not licensable. That's what this statute's getting at. We would like to be able to deny, have in statute that we can deny the application for a license on the same basis that we can refuse a license or cancel a license.
The dash five, that's in dash 383. This amendment uses the language of 383. Do you want to talk to 383 itself?
Maybe we should. This uses.
Mr. Chair, if I might, the language currently in Senate Bill 383 is identical to language that's in House Bill 2609, which has already passed the House, which is on its way to the Senate floor. This is the so-called revisers bill, the bill to clean up statute. So the language that's currently in Senate Bill 383 doesn't need to be there. It's redundant with the language that's currently in House Bill 2609. It's simply a housekeeping measure to clean up omission in current statute.
Mr. Putman, that was not the... You, weren't you saying that this amendment, the dash twos, is also dealt with in what was 383, but I don't see them being the same.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, 376 starts in at the end of 383.
Right.
It's added.
Yes, as an addition.
On page 2, yeah.
To the new 383.
That's correct.
Yes.
But the adoption of the dash 2 brings language of 383 in that is not there in the dash 5 amendment.
We'll deal with that in a second. Okay. Good questions, Senator Lee?
No, I think we're going to need a chart pack and we put a map to connect the dots, but anyway.
And a drink.
Go ahead.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, if we're ready for the dash three amendments now,
mm-hmm.
which would be what we were calling Senate Bill 379. This, Mr. Chairman, this Senate bill was intended to simply be a simple administrative kind of change of title so that we could use staff for two programs that currently are in two separate cost centers. We have an alcohol education program for people who serve drinks. We have a clerk training program for clerks who have actually sold to a minor already. The employee wants to retain that clerk. The clerk needs to take training before they can continue employment. Those are two separate programs. This bill was intended just to combine those two programs. We understand that the wording is somewhat confusing, and it sounds as though we're adding a new program, which we are not. But we are willing, because it appears to be confusing, we're certainly willing to change the wording to clarify that this is not a new program. It's simply putting two existing programs in the same cost center that do the same thing so we can use the same staff. So we don't have to have two sets of staff working on basically the same issues.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Perkin.
This requires statutory change. You can't do this through rule.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Corcoran, the statute was very clear that the administrative fees for server education go directly to server education only.
Okay. This is the kind of minutiae I really like doing, Mr. Chairman.
I thought you would enjoy this on Friday afternoon.
Good.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, we love it also. Okay, dash four amendments. We've already talked about. I think that's it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nicole McGill.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Nicole McGill with Senator Duke's office. Just bringing to your attention a letter you have before you from Mr. Skip Hokey. He is a Century Market owner in Astoria, and it is in support of Senate Bill 658, or what was Senate Bill 658, which would delete the address requirement for ID when purchasing alcohol. Mr. Hokey would just like to express his thanks and gratitude for reviewing his letter and taking your time to look at this issue. Being in an area that serves a lot of Coast Guard people and military people. Thank you.
Thank you. You are prepared to answer lots of questions about it?
Oh, yes. Yes.
You've got to be careful with her, Mr. Chair. She's Irish.
Uh-oh.
I found that out. We have to be very careful. The Irish and alcohol, you know.
Yeah. That's what we hear. And now I've got some people that have been volunteered to come testify. Grover Simmons.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Grover, for the record, Grover Simmons representing Oregon Federated Organizations and the Oregon State Elks. We are in complete agreement with the Dash 5 amendment. It sets a flat rate of $200 for a license to a private club in lieu of the schedule that's now the law, 100, 200, 300. You flatten it out at $200, and that's agreeable to us, and we thank you very much for passing this along that line. We're happy campers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Bowe and Gary Oxley, you want to come up and Bill Perry? Yes.
You have to bring Perry.
I came to answer your question.
So I can't repeat them in committee, Mr. Perry.
For the record, Bill Perry at the Oregon Restaurant Association. I wanted to address the Dash 5s. I would say a majority of it we're okay with. I did want to answer the question that Senator Corcoran addressed about the noise standard. I wasn't really satisfied with the response from the OLCC, because as you look at, we're on page 6 of the Dash 5 amendments. This House Bill 2456, which is this, is out. It was brought forward last time because of a problem they had over on the coast. Alan Brown and Terry Thompson brought forward a bill. And as you look down on line 26 and 27, the deleted language, this was dealt with last session in 2705. And what we asked as a group and worked with the governor's office on was, as it deals, we feel our members need to be good, upstanding members of the community. So the community should set a standard. And just because you have complaints doesn't necessarily mean that it's a violation. So we have asked that they come back and do a violation. So what the measure, what 2705 said, and as you look at 26, only if the noise violates an ordinance. And what happened over there was the community was not, it's actually a county ordinance instead of a city ordinance, and the county couldn't enforce their ordinance from their perspective. And the OLCC still pursued it. So what we've tried to do in this language is make it even clearer than we did last time, and that's what we need to try and make it so the community sets a noise standard, and if the OLCC needs the help and the act of a conviction, they have that right. But we want the local governments to, and that's why we've added on the next page 1 through 6, and it says it has to be convicted of violating the ordinance. I just feel that in many cases there's going to be different comprehensive land use laws as it deals with noise, and you're asking almost the OLCC to do too much if it's their responsibility to decide what is proper in that community. And the example would be if I've got a nightclub that's 18 and under and then a nightclub that's over 21 that has alcohol, one is going to be enforcing a noise ordinance from a state level and the other one's going to be doing it from a local. If since it's a liquor licensee, you want them to assist in trying to get a conviction on a violation, that's between the OLCC and the community. But the community should be deciding what that violation is. And all we're trying to do is clarify that language.
Mr. Chair? Corcoran? So, Bill, it's fair to say then that the deleted language and the additional language really don't move the goalpost at all, then, is what you're saying.
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, in my opinion, I don't. Obviously, in the OLCCs, they do, but I think that clarifies what we were trying to get after last time. So it is very tighter, much more specific, and, you know, you could say there was probably a little more wiggle room in the last one than there isn't in this one, but what we're trying to get at is a community has to decide if their ordinance was violated. So, yes, it's a much more clear and specific language, but we're hoping the intent is the same. And if the committee doesn't feel that, we're willing to work with them on it. But what we're trying to get at is the community here is, in essence, is your judicial branch. And I don't care if it's a fine, a slap on the wrist, or whatever. We just want the community to say the ordinance was violated.
So, Mr. Chair, really it's lines 30, 31, and 1 on page 7 then that it is changed. Maybe considered obtrusive or excessive only if the noise violates the ordinance that a reasonable person would not expect to hear. That is the non-violation part of this that you guys object to.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Corcoran, when you look at on the next page on the line 7 through 12, it deals with places without ordinances, and it does reasonable person.
Okay. Right. My point was, Mr. Chair, that Part B of that says noise caused by patrons located within the boundaries of a city that has an ordinance may be considered obtrusive or excessive only, and then it uses a reasonable person standard. You're getting rid of the reasonable person standard and just going to straight conviction.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is correct.
And, Mr. Chair,
mm-hmm.
I guess the other question it begs, I mean, I can understand from the perspective of the owner why they wouldn't want to be hassled by, you know, one neighboring person that just didn't like any noise. But were there any examples of problems that where OLCC took enforcement action that you thought was inappropriate?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Corcoran, or Italia, it's a restaurant, obviously, that this bill came forward on. It was an ordinance. There was a county ordinance that no violation was ever assessed on, or not assessed on. There was a mobile home park next door. The guy kept complaining that they handled out, or the police were called several different times. There was only one citation issued. It was not adjudicated strictly from a technicality standpoint, so nobody ever found out actually if the noise standard was violated. But once again, they were in court or hearings process with the OCC a long time in a situation where they had an ordinance and there was no violation, and it was inside noise, which, from my perspective, clearly violates the intent of what 2705 did last session, which is the deleted language in line 26 and 27.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Did you want to speak to any of the rest of the Dash 5s or any other sections of the bill, other amendments?
No, not at this time. Thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Brian Bowe, representing the Oregon Grocery Industry Association, and out of the series of amendments that the committee is considering, we only have objections to the Dash 3, and those were for the reasons that the witness from OLCC spoke about, in that those provisions appeared to us to create a new mandated clerk training program, and they have distributed to the industry a statement of intent about that bill, and we have agreed that they will go back to council and redraft these provisions to more clearly reflect what their stated intent is, and we will take a look at those when they're done and consider it at that time.
Okay. That's probably a good question. Who is going to take their intent to legislative council?
I believe that they are, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
We'll amend it into 485. Don't worry about it. We've got this down.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, Gary Oxley representing Fred Meyer, Safeway, Rite Aid, and the Oregon Neighborhood Stores Association. Albeit rare, we likewise support the OLCC amendments with the exception of the Dash 3.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wants to testify in this bill that I haven't volunteered yet? Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 383. Sounds like we've got a little bit of work to do yet on the bill to get everyone in love with it. So we will, I believe it's scheduled for next Friday.
Yeah, let me know when you're going to hear this one, Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran wants to be here.
Make sure I'm in heaven with teeth cleaned or something.
Okay. We will now move to, we obviously won't do Senate Bill 35. It's being taken care of there. Move to a public hearing on Senate Bill 194.
What happened to 35?
It's part of 383 now.
Oh, right. Okay.
You know, Senator Corcoran, we like to do things in bundles.
You got me bundled, buddy.
Senate Bill 194. Just a little bill.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 194 comes to you after months, as I understand it, of collaboration between landlords and tenants. They make a series, really, of technical amendments in the landlord-tenant law and address a concern that was raised by a court case a couple of years ago. And no opposition has been reported to the staff on this bill at this point.
Thank you. Senate Chief, any chance? Is it here?
Emily Cedar Lee.
Emily, anyone? Genoa. No? Okay. Sean Miller. David Niebel. Anybody else?
I should tell you, Mr. Chairman, the Dash 1 amendment replaces all but one sentence of the original bill. Technically, it replaces everything, but the sentences in the original bill are in the amendment also.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Emily Cedarlee for the Multifamily Housing Council of Oregon, representing rental property owners and managers. In 1983, A then Senate Representative Dick Springer got angry because Michael Marcus of Legal Aid and I were arguing in a hearing about landlord-tenant and sent us out in the hallway to get along, and we've been working together ever since. We started May 20th of 2000. We had 20 meetings with up to 39 participants. Our agreement this time was not to make any major changes to landlord-tenant law. I'm wearing my tulip earrings and my spring blouse to encourage you that this is not a bill that you want to spend as much time as you did on the previous one. There are technical amendments to landlord-tenant to address court cases and some technical problems that we have, and there are explanations for each section that we could go through, but I don't think you want to do so. But basically, our goal is for you to recognize that we're here and that we want to pass the bill. Legislative Council, we did get these late yesterday afternoon. Legislative Council did take part of our drafting, which was done by John Van Landingham, and change some of the things around, which we are concerned may change some of the meetings, but we're willing to get those cleaned up on the House side and take care of it. It's just reversing words around that sometimes we'd spend hours arguing over. And for us in landlord-tenant, every word has a specific meaning. So.
Thank you, and please don't point out those specific words.
Pardon? I have to say I spent 4 hours and tried to color code it and said, I'm going to give up. There's no way to say why what he did was different than what we wanted, but they're there. And if it makes a huge legal change, then we'll go ahead with the amendments again on the other side.
Good afternoon, Sharon Fleming Barrett, Oregon Rental Housing Association. Allow me to take you line by line through my 17 pages of testimony.
How much do you like this bill?
This is an excellent bill. We urge you to vote yes. It has had a great deal of work by people interested in the process and in the industry. This bill has something for landlords. It has something for tenants. It has great benefit for the industry in general. We urge your yes vote. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm David Niebel with the Oregon Law Center. We're a private nonprofit that represents low-income people around the state in civil legal matters. I was a participant in most of the process that led to this bill, and in that regard, I was representing the interests of low-income tenants, as was my colleague John Van Landingham from Lane County Law and Advocacy Center, who is the principal drafter of this bill. Also representing tenants were representatives from the Community Alliance of Tenants. I think all the tenant representatives are satisfied with this bill, feel like it's a reasoned and balanced bill with something in it for landlords and for tenants, and we would urge you to pass this on. I think Ms. Cedarleaf has said it well, that we probably will want to make some amendments, technical amendments to this, after we look at these amendments a little bit more closely, but we can do that on the House side. So I would urge you to pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Brittany, any questions? Thank you very much. Senator Shields, you wish to testify on a bill?
No way.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, in the absence of the quorum, we will close the public hearing, and if we get a quorum back, we will go into work session. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 269. I guess technically we're a subcommittee. That's Senator Shields in charge.
Mr. Chairman, this bill comes out of a passage at federal level of the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act, which addresses changes in the marketplace between in the financial community, where banks, security companies, and insurance companies back in the 1930s were prohibited from treading on one another's turf, if you will, to protect consumers. Since then, there have been extensive changes in the way business is done. Graham Bleach Lilly tries to address that, tries to establish a process by which states can share information under certain laws of privacy and achieve some uniformity from state to state. This bill has had the amendments that you have, while they're the Dash 2, have themselves been amended a lot and represent, I believe, a consensus on the part of the three components of the industry and the regulator that this is what they want.
Okay, who's going to talk about it first? Joe, is it you or is it...
We both will.
Okay, Richard.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thanks for allowing us to appear today. My name is Dick Knockleby. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 269. I'm the administrator of the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities within the Department of Consumer and Business Services. I oversee the regulation of banks, credit unions, securities, and several other financially rated programs. In 1999, Congress passed the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act. This was the most far-reaching effort since the Great Depression to modernize financial services. It eliminates regulatory barriers between the big three of financial services, banking, insurance, and securities. Senate Bill 269 reflects the changes in federal law made by the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act. Senate Bill 269 permits financial service regulators in the states, the federal government, and internationally to exchange confidential information. We do this now for state chartered banks and credit unions with our federal counterparts as permitted currently in Oregon law. Senate Bill 269 also recognizes a new type of financial holding company, the financial holding company, which was created under GLIBA, which is the acronym that they use for that act, can be used simultaneously to hold and operate banks, insurance companies, securities firms, and affiliated financial service entities. Along with the basic Senate Bill 269, we're offering some Dash 2 amendments that add some references to financial holding companies and an Oregon Bankers Association request to allow banks to offer options and warrants to insiders without a specific shareholder vote if the options and warrants are also being offered to all shareholders. Senate Bill 269 is the product of wide-ranging cooperation among a very diverse group of stakeholders, ranging from banks, credit unions, insurance companies, insurance agencies, and the securities industry. We're not aware of any opposition. I urge your support for the bill and the amendments. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have now or after Joel Ariyo addresses the financial privacy provisions of the bill.
Go ahead, Joel.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Ariyo. I'm the insurance administrator for Oregon. The Graham-Leach-Bliley Act addresses financial privacy in two respects. One, it established national standards or federal standards for banks and security firms, and our bill picks up or leaves in place Oregon laws that would be consistent with those standards for banks and security firms. The other piece of Graham-Leach-Bliley is to leave it to the states to determine the proper privacy standards for insurance companies. And when I talk about insurance companies here, it also includes banks to the extent they're involved in insurance transactions. So we put together a work group to talk about privacy under insurance. Our starting point was the 1981 Oregon law, which is among the stronger privacy laws in the country. It requires consumer authorization in most circumstances to do any sharing of financial or other insurance-related personal information. That law, I'm happy to report to you, is still intact in the Dash 2 amendments. That is the basic structure that has worked for us for 20 years. It's worked for consumers. We get very few complaints in this area. It's also worked for the companies. We have very few issues with companies over anything in that law being too difficult or too burdensome to work with. So our whole effort here was to preserve the basic structure of that law, and that is intact dash two amendments. There are a number of particular specific issues about Gramm-Leach-Bliley that we did have to address and adjust for. The kinds of notices that were required under Gramm-Leach-Bliley are different than the kinds of notices that were previously required in Oregon, so we adjusted there. The timing of the notices was different. We adjusted that. The two overriding principles in trying to reconcile these two laws were, one, on health information, we wanted to ensure that that had the highest levels of protection. And in fact, when we looked back at the 1981 law, we ended up strengthening some of the health provisions of that law to make sure that that kind of information had very, very high protection. On financial information, when we looked at Gramm-Leach-Bliley vis-a-vis our law, we saw a few places where we could do minor adjusting of our law and make it more consistent with Gramm-Leach-Bliley, and we did those things, consistent with continuing to protect the consumer. So that's a short summary of what we did to adjust the two laws, but again, in closing, just want to reinforce that we started with a strong consumer protection law in Oregon, been with us for 20 years, and we ended with that law with just a few modifications necessary to comply with Gramm-Leach-Bliley. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you. There are potentially some technical issues with the bill that aren't perfect, and you are going to look to the House to address them? Is that...
That would be our preference. It's a big enough bill that we could hold it here for a few more days, but there would probably be some more technical things before we were done. And so if it's the will of the committee, we would just as soon move it to the House and handle a couple technical things over there.
Thank you. Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, and where's my sign-up sheet? I know somebody else wanted to talk about it. There it is. Peggy Annette and Paul Clausgrove.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Annette said I should go first or could go first. I just wanted to point out that I'm one of the pieces of the technical amendments that will be cleared up on the House side, and it has to do with the fact in the first sections of the bill, when they refer to different kinds of regulated financial institutions, a couple of kinds of regulated financial institutions were omitted, and those will be inserted on the House side. I'd be glad to answer any questions. I just wanted the committee to know what that technical amendment would be.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Peggy Annett, and I'm representing the Health Insurance Association of America, and I'm here to support the sections of the bill that deal with the health insurance area. We definitely appreciate the department's work on bringing us all together. As written, the bill implements not only the GLB requirements, building upon the current statutory protections already in Oregon law relating to health insurance, but also provides for us the flexibility to adapt to another set of federal privacy standards that we're already working on. And that is that particular component where we've got the framework to work not only under current statute, GLB, and move forward under the new HIPAA requirements that we're facing, that we particularly appreciate the department's work.
Thank you. That's all I have time to testify. I'm just going through a checklist here of potential interested parties. I'm assuming that because no one has signed up to testify that everyone loves it. Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
We'll close the public hearing, and we'll be in recess until we can find another committee member so we can vote.
There's one of them over in Bend, I know that, and they're done with their hearing over there, so get them back here.
One of them in Michigan. Why don't we get that one instead?